it is Mother's Day, May 10th, 2009, here in Honolulu, and we're going to be reading something that has to do with mothers from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 17. Krishna says, Pitaham asya jagato matadata pitamaha vejam pavitram omkara riksama yajra evacha. I am the father of this universe, Krishna says, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable om. I am also the rig, the sama, and the yajur vedas. So this is from a section in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is telling us how we can understand him, even from the point of view of being in this world. How we can have some idea of who is God. Because many people talk about, I want to love God. A lot of people talk about love of God. Or, you know, I love Jesus. Right? How do I really love God? But in order to love somebody, you have to know them. You have to know something about them. You can't love somebody you don't know anything about. It's sort of meaningless. If I say, oh, I've met some boy, and I love him, and someone says, oh, what's his name? Oh, I don't know. Where does he live? I don't know. What's he like? I don't know. Then what is the meaning of love? So in order to really love God, we have to know something of him. But how do you know him? How do you get to know him? I mean, most of us don't talk with God. And we're rather suspicious of someone who claims to. If someone says, yes, I talk to God, we're thinking, you know, I wonder if they need to see a psychiatrist. So how are you going to get to know this person that's difficult to see, that's difficult to talk to? So Krishna's telling us how we can see him even in the world, how we can understand something about him. And here he's saying, I'm the father of this universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. The object of knowledge, the purifier, and the syllable om, the rig, the sama, and the yajur vedas. Now, this purport that Prabhupada gives on this verse is very extraordinary. It's, I'd say, one of the most unusual purports or explanations in Prabhupada's books. He says, the entire cosmic manifestations, moving and non-moving, are manifested by different activities of Krishna's energy. In the material existence, we create different relationships with different living entities who are nothing but Krishna's marginal energy. Under the creation of Prakriti, some of them appear as our father, mother, grandfather, creator, etc., but actually they are parts and parcels of Krishna. As such, these living entities who appear to be our father, mother, etc., are nothing but Krishna. So Prabhupada is saying the person we take as our father or mother, they're actually, because they're part of Krishna, in one sense they're actually Krishna. In this verse, the word datta means creator. Not only are our father and mother parts and parcels of Krishna, but the creator, grandmother, and grandfather, etc., are also Krishna. So Prabhupada is not just saying they're part of Krishna, he's saying they are Krishna. Actually, any living entity being part and parcel of Krishna is Krishna. All the Vedas, therefore, aim only towards Krishna. Whatever we want to know through the Vedas is but a progressive step towards understanding Krishna. That subject matter which helps us purify our constitutional position is especially Krishna. Similarly, the living entity who is inquisitive to understand all Vedic principles is also part and parcel of Krishna, and as such is also Krishna. Finish reading. So if we're thinking about mother, to understand that all mothers and fathers are part and parcel of Krishna, and in one sense are Krishna, and the Krishna is the supreme, not only the supreme father, but the supreme mother. So most religions teach that God is the supreme father. Here he's saying he's both the supreme father and the supreme mother. And if we think about this for a minute, what does it mean, mother? Well, mother represents shelter and home. Generally, unless people have a really horrible home, most people want to go home. Most people like the idea of going home. If someone says, oh, I'm going home, we think of that as a pleasant thing, as a safety, as a shelter. Most of us are very attached, again, not everybody, but generally we have some strong attachment to the place where we grew up. The country, the state, the neighborhood, the house, this is my home. And home is there because it's the place of our parents. And especially the mother, of course father also, but especially the mother represents a real shelter. Generally speaking, again, sometimes there are horrible mothers in this world, but generally speaking, mother and father, especially mother, is someone who's going to give unconditional love. And if you think about what does it mean to be a mother? So mother is that person who nourishes the child from her own body. Generally, we don't do this. We don't say, you know, oh, you're hungry, would you like a little piece of my finger to eat? You know? No problem. It's hard enough for most people to give away part of their money to feed somebody else. You know, it's a great person who gives part of their money in charity to feed the poor people. But what's to speak of giving in charity your own body? So the baby in the womb, the mother is maintaining that child from her own body. And it's not such a simple thing. Now she feels more tired, she has to be careful what she eats and what she drinks and what she thinks and where she goes, everything she does, she's thinking, is this going to be good for my baby? Is this going to be good for my baby? Is this going to be good for my baby? She's putting the interests of the child above her own desires. You know, a mother might want to go out and drink alcohol, but she thinks, oh, that's not going to be good for my baby. I better not do that. And then even after the baby's born, she's nourishing the baby from her own body. I was reading an article about breastfeeding where some women were saying, well, we don't want to have to breastfeed because then that means we can't go back to work right away so easily. You know, it's such a burden on us. We can't equally share the childcare with our husband. You know, what's all this hype about breastfeeding being better? And I was thinking, it's a sacrifice. It's a big sacrifice. And you're sacrificing, the greatest sacrifice that a person makes is their own body. Who are like the biggest heroes, you know, somebody who gives his life for a good cause. Someone who fights against tyranny and oppression and is martyred, right? I remember a story in our school of a teenage sister and her little brother and sister who went to school, and of course you wouldn't have that here, but they had a snowstorm, and they had to leave the school early, and this was a true story, but it happened before the days of the automobile. They were coming back with their horse and carriage back to their house, and the snowstorm was so severe, if any of you have ever been in a snowstorm, sometimes you can't see anything. So the snow was so thick they couldn't see anything, and they got off the road, they got lost. Actually, they were very close to a house, but they didn't know that. And the buggy turned over, and the horses escaped, and there they were, abandoned in the middle of this blizzard. And the older sister, as time went on and no one rescued them, she finally took her little brother and sister under her own body and sheltered them from the blizzard and died that way. So those are the sort of people that we revere as heroes. Someone who gives their own life, their own body for the sake of others or for a good cause. But that's what every mother does. Every single mother is doing. So that is the sacrifice of the mother. And because our mother does that, therefore we have a lot of trust for our mother. We feel this is somebody who I know will have my best interest at heart, who I know is going to care about me, who I know is going to be there for me. Because who else in our life has made that kind of a sacrifice? Very, very difficult to find somebody at that level. And, you know, when we were little children, we weren't very, probably, unless any of you were extraordinary, we weren't very appreciative. You know, I haven't seen a little baby under the age of 5 be very appreciative of their mother. You know, the mother says, now don't do that. Don't hit your little brother with the fire truck on the head. I want to. Go stand in the corner. I hate you, Mommy, putting me in the corner. Right? It's a typical thing that 2-3-year-old kids will say, I hate you, Mommy. Why do I have to do that? Why do I have to listen to you? Why can't I do what I want? And even as kids get older, I mean, how many 12, 13, 14-year-olds say to their mother, wow, you really sacrificed for me? You know, that's rare. I think it's not until you have your own kids that you go, whoa, my parents did this for me? Oh, my God. So we think of the mother as a shelter, and Prabhupada often gives the example of the little baby who's crying, and many people are trying to comfort the child. you know, rocking them and talking to them and singing them. But until they're with their mother drinking their mother's milk, they're not going to be pacified. And that's the position of all of us in this world, that we're looking for shelter in so many things. We're looking for shelter in money, in a good job, in a nice house, in having good, you know, attractive clothes to wear, whatever, having an interesting career. So many things we're looking. This thing is going to give me comfort. This is going to give me solace. This is going to give me pleasure. But we find that we're not fully satisfied. Isn't it like that? You know, you have something you think it's going to satisfy. You think, if I get this job, then I'll be satisfied. And you get that job, and after some time you find that you're still not satisfied. Now you achieve all the things you want to achieve, and you get to a point, you say, is that all there is? And that's because we're not going to be satisfied until we're back with our original mother, the Supreme Lord. You know, we can be passed from auntie to uncle to cousin to brother to sister, but until you can drink your mother's milk, you're not going to be happy. So that's our situation, actually. We want to be nourished by the Supreme Lord. And just like the mother is sacrificing, what to speak of the sacrifice that God has made. So we learn from the Bhagavad Gita, Ichidvesha, that all of us who have taken birth in this world, we have come here out of rebellion towards God. Now there's a story, Paradise Lost, or in Christianity there's the idea of the devil, he's a fallen angel. Well, my dear friends, we're all fallen angels. We were all with the Supreme Lord in his own abode, like Jesus' story of the prodigal son, and we left. They said, no, I don't want to have you as the center. I want to be the center. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. I want to be the controller. I want to be the enjoyer. I want to pretend that I'm a little god. And out of this, the kindness, the same kind of kindness we see to some extent in even an ordinary mother, even in an animal mother, we've not been abandoned. You know, parents do not abandon, generally, even a child who's a criminal. I read once about a father who was a police officer. He was investigating a serial killer. And it turned out the serial killer was his own son. And he was writing about how he dealt with this. He said, as a police officer, I knew my son had to be in jail. But as a father, he was still my son. I still had affection for him. So Krishna still has affection for us. In fact, he says, suridam sarabhutanam, surid, rid is the heart, su means very special, that he's our heartfelt friend. Yishvara sarabhutanam, ride sharadunatustati, he's literally in our heart, reciprocating with us. So this is very rare. If we have some friend who denounces us and insults us and leaves us, we generally cut off our relationship with them. We don't generally say, well, I'm still their heartfelt friend. Who does that? Generally only parents. And even many parents won't do that. There are even many parents who might renounce their child or say, okay, no more inheritance for you. I disown you. Even sometimes parents disown their children. Or like Franz Kafka had this story, Metamorphosis. Maybe some of you are familiar with that story. You know that story? I did that drama one time when I was young. Where this young man wakes up and he's turned into a giant cockroach. So even the most loving mother, if she went to wake up her darling child and the child had turned into a giant cockroach, probably wouldn't feel so much affection anymore. Right? Sometimes you have fairy tales like that where somebody gets turned into a dog, you know, and the wife throws him out of the house. So, but Krishna is not like that. Even though in this world we're reincarnating through many species of life, he never leaves our heart. He stays with us. He doesn't say, no matter how sinful we are, no matter how abominable we are, no matter what desires we have, because this body that we have, this might be a shock to some of you, this body that we have is the gross form of our desires. Now, does anyone here look in the mirror and go, perfect? Or do you look at your life and think, yep, everything has just been ideal. I wouldn't change a thing. I remember seeing a comic of Charlie Brown. You know Charlie Brown?
comics.
So he goes to Lucy, the psychiatrist, and Lucy says to Charlie, how would you like to live your life all over again? He said, can I change anything? She said, no, exactly the same. He goes, and he runs in the other direction. But my dear friends, this life that we're living and this body that we have are the result of our own desires. Our desires as we exemplify them through our actions, called karma. That's what the law of karma means. Something like, you know, somebody wants to see a comedy movie, so they find a movie that fits their desires. So this body and this story that we're living is what we wanted. And if you think about this body for a minute, it's a little while before we have to eat, so you can forget about this before the meal, but if you think about this body for a minute, it's not really very pleasant. There's very few things that come out of this body that are nice, maybe tears, but I don't think anything else. And if you took, you know, take the nicest part of the body, like the eyes. So you took out the eyes and put them on. It's not very nice. What to speak of the not so nice parts of the body? You know, if you had a little pile here of spleens and intestines and eyeballs and hair. But if the body is the external material form of our desires, what does that say about our desires? They're pretty gross. That means the things that we're wanting are pretty nasty. And still, Krishna stays with us as our dearest friend. Still. You know, when parents have children, I met one parent whose child had become a heroin addict. It was so painful. She still loved her son, but it was still very, very painful. So no matter what we become addicted to, no matter what we desire, no matter what kind of body we get, Krishna still loves us. And he loves us so much, just like an ordinary mother is nurturing the child from her own body, from her own blood. From her own blood, from her own milk. So Krishna is also nurturing us from his own body. Really, this universe is the Lord's body. I think of what we eat. So just like there's mango trees out there. So what's a mango? What is it made out of, really? How did the tree produce that mango? Where did the tree get the energy to produce the mango?
From Krishna.
From Krishna, but how exactly? How did it get it? From the what?
Sunlight.
From the sunlight. So the tree is so incredible that it can turn sunlight into food. Pretty amazing, huh? What else? Sunlight and? Water and? One more thing.
Earth.
So earth minerals and water and sunlight. And of course, if you burn a tree, it goes back to those forms. When you burn a tree, you're releasing the energy of the sun as fire, and you're releasing the water, comes out as smoke, and the earth minerals come out as ash. It goes back to those original forms. So what we're eating when we eat the mango is just earth minerals, water, and sun. And Krishna says all of those are his. He said not only they're his, they're him. He says, I am the fragrance of the earth. I am the taste of water. I am the light of the sun. So Krishna has transformed his own energy into a mango. Actually, I was just reading where Prabhupada said that Krishna says not only that he's, it's in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, not only am I the taste of water, but I'm the taste of anything. So when you're eating that mango, that flavor of the mango, that's the flavor of God. And what nice food he's giving us. An ordinary government who puts people in prison doesn't feed them very nice food. There was some big scandal a few months ago, I think in Arkansas, of some warden. There was a law, I think it was Arkansas, there was a law in that state that the wardens of the prison could take any extra money left from feeding the prisoners and pocket it. So, you know, they were given whatever it was, like $3 or $4 per day per prisoner, but if they could manage to feed the prisoners for less, they could keep the difference. So this guy was literally starving these prisoners. He was feeding them maybe $1.25 a day worth of food, and it went to court. A lot of these prisoners had lost 30, 40, 50 pounds, and this guy had made like $200,000 pocketing this extra money. Generally, when people are in prison, they don't serve them mangoes. Right? We had some of our devotees who were put in prison in the former Soviet Union just for chanting Hare Krishna, and all they were given was old bread. But here, we've disobeyed the laws of God, we've rebelled against Him, we've come to the material world, and He gives us mangoes. He gives us mangoes, He gives us papaya, He gives us pineapple. That's love. That's love. That's a real friend. Do you do that to people who are rebellious to you? Do you give them mangoes and papayas, pineapples? No. What to speak of feeding them with your own body? You don't go to people who criticize you and blaspheme you and turn against you and give them your own blood to live on. Anybody do that? Nobody does that. But Krishna does that. So the love of a mother for her child, even an animal mother in this world, is extraordinary. We had one video in our school about scorpion mice. You ever heard of scorpion mice? So most mice eat what? Cheese. Grains, mostly. Most mice are vegetarian. So there are some insect-eating mice, but generally mice are vegetarian. But there are some mice that eat scorpions. And they usually win, too, and they can withstand lots of stings from the scorpion. They're pretty heavy-duty mice. No, normally we don't think of mice as being aggressive carnivores. They're very, very aggressive. Tough fighters, but they love their children. And they'll sacrifice for their children. And if some owl eats one of their children, the male and female scorpion mice will hug each other and cry. And what to speak of animals like elephants, you know, where the whole elephant group will take care of the baby. So even among animals, it's like that. You know, there are fish who guard their eggs. They say that the parental instinct among animals is the highest instinct, more than sex drive, more than drive for food, that animals will go without food in order to protect their young. Right? You have those penguins in Antarctica that go for something like 3 months without food. That's the father's. The mother penguin lays the egg and the father penguin puts it on his feet, and there's no trees there, you know? And there's not like this fresh tropical breeze in Antarctica. It's just heavy-duty Antarctic wind. And they're there in the Antarctic wind. They have to take turns who's on the outside, otherwise they freeze to death. You know, the penguins in the middle get a little warmth, and they keep shuffling. And the mother penguin's out getting food for 2-3 months. It's a long way to get food in the Antarctic winter because the ice cap is very big. And they're just taking care of the little eggs. You know, or the birds that will attack a larger bird, a hawk or an eagle, pretend to be wounded to try to get the predator away from their nest just to protect their young. So therefore, Prabhupada says that this feeling between parent and child, especially for the mother and child, is the closest thing we find to spiritual love. But it gives us some idea of who is Krishna and how much He loves us. Now, the benefit of finding out how much Krishna loves us, if we look, here we're at the 9th chapter, but if we look at the 5th chapter, where Krishna says, Bhaktiram Yagatapasam Sarvalok Maheshram Suvidam Sarvabhutanam Gyatramam Shanti Richati. Now, if I have somebody who loves me, and they'll give me even their own body, and they'll take care of me even if I'm hateful of them, and even if I have nasty desires, that's a nice person to have as a friend. Now, if that person's also very, 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 very powerful, boy, I would really be a nice person to have as a friend. So Krishna is saying that He's the controller of everything. I mean, if we think of how powerful God is, look at the sky, how He's making all the planets move at certain times. I mean, who else could do that? What power is that? I mean, what airline wouldn't want to have the on-time schedule of the rotation of the planets? Could you imagine if there was an airline that could say, we are on time to the billionth of a second every flight? You can say where the planets are going to be 100 years from now. How does He do that? How does it keep all these big planets floating in space without having to refuel? You know, there's no, we don't find the collisions. We don't have to worry we're going to collide with Mars or something like that. How powerful is he? And he's our dearmost friend. So when we understand that, we get, first of all, peace. That the person who's controlling everything is a nice guy. He's very powerful, and he's very caring. So I don't have to worry about anything. I really don't have to worry about anything. Everything is going according to the plan of a great and benevolent intelligence. I don't have to be filled with anxiety. Yet vimam shanti michati. Shanti means peace. And Prabhupada says earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, how can you be happy unless you're peaceful? Is it possible to be both in anxiety and happy at the same time? Pretty hard, isn't it? If you're always worried, you know, how am I going to get enough money? Oh, it's an economic downturn. I've lost my job. What am I going to do? And even you're there eating your delicious lunch, you're thinking, how am I going to get enough money? How am I going to get enough money? Right? You can't be peaceful. If you're worried, oh, you know, maybe my wife's going to divorce me. How can you be happy? Even if you have a lot of money, even if you have a good job, even if you have a nice house. So in this world, those of us who haven't realized that Krishna is in control and is our best friend, we're always in anxiety. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? Something terrible is going to happen. All these terrible things happen. Something terrible might happen to me. Terrible things have happened to me. Terrible things will happen to me again in the future. But if everything's being controlled by a loving God, then you know what? There isn't anything terrible. He said, well, things seem pretty terrible to me. You know, the two-year-old who gets put in the corner because he hit his brother over the head with a fire truck thinks that being in the corner is really a catastrophe. Any of you who've ever seen two-year-olds? It's a major catastrophe. Their world has fallen apart. It really has. I mean, they'll be there, oh, I want to get out of the corner. I'm going to get out of the corner. I'm going to sneak out of the corner when you're not looking. I'm not staying in the corner. But it's part of the kindness of the parents. So all of the so-called terrible things that we see in this world are also manifestations of Krishna's kindness. We can explain them as the karmic reactions. You know, the mother knows you're not going to grow up to be a happy person if I let you hit your little brother over the head with a fire truck. Staying in the corner is not such a big deal compared to what's going to happen to you if you grow up thinking you can hit people over the head with fire trucks. So that's the kindness of the mother. So our reactions to our karma are Krishna's kindness. They're also a manifestation of Krishna's love. And from another point of view, this world is an illusion. I'm not really getting in a car accident or having my wife leave me or losing my job or none of those things are really happening to me. Na jayate miyate vakadachit nayan bhutva bhavita bhanabhuyaha ajo nicha shasvatoyam prano na hanyate hanyamane shurire. I'm different from this body. I'm just the witness. I have this body because I had certain desires. This body, as I said, is the gross form of my desires. But these things are not happening to me. I wanted to experience them. And so Krishna, out of his kindness, says, okay. Have an illusory experience. So nothing really terrible or wonderful materially is happening to me at all. And all of the so-called terrible and wonderful things are Krishna reciprocating with me to bring me ultimately, like the mother wants the child ultimately to be a good citizen, to bring me to the point where I'm going to be really happy. That's his whole purpose. His whole purpose is to bring us to a point where my desires are such that I won't get a body full of things like intestines and hair and eyeballs. We'll all get a body made of pure eternity, knowledge, and bliss. That's what he's working with me to do. And when one knows that, one becomes peaceful and one becomes happy. And not only peaceful and happy, but then we decide, you know, I think I might want to surrender to that person. Because Krishna, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, after telling us about himself, he says, Mame kam sharanam raja, you surrender to me. Materially, this word surrender is not very attractive. We usually use the word surrender in war. The side that surrenders never wants to surrender. They're only surrendering because so many of their army has been killed or their country has been decimated or whatever that they just don't have a chance of winning anymore. They regretfully surrender. They figure, well, we might as well surrender now before our whole country's finished. They wanted to win. All right, don't kill me, I surrender. Unconditional surrender. All right. Can I have a few conditions? No. Okay. And sometimes they keep resentments, like Germany that surrendered after World War I, and they were thinking, when are we going to get back at those guys? So we hear surrender, and we think it's like that. It's not that kind of surrender. It's the surrender of the child on the lap of the mother. Did you ever go on a trip with your parents when you were young and you fell asleep and they carried you into the hotel room, you know, and you woke up in the hotel? You just fell asleep in the back of the car? Never do that, right? Your parents are driving somewhere. You just fall asleep in the back. You don't know where they're going. You surrender. Wherever my parents are taking me, that's okay. It's that kind of surrender. That's a surrender of love. The surrender of the husband to the wife, of the wife to the husband. It's a surrender of love. People get married. Marriage is a scary thing, especially nowadays. Marriage is a really scary thing. But people, when they get married, they say, I'm going to stick with you. Of course, not that many people do it anymore, but anyway. I'm going to stick with you no matter what. I'm going to stick with you through sickness and health, through rich, poor, good, bad. And when you're taking that vow, you don't know. How do you know? You don't know. Maybe the day after the wedding, your spouse is going to get hit by a car and be a quadriplegic. That may be the rest of your life. That's a big surrender, isn't it? Therefore, not many people want to make it anymore. But that's a surrender of love. So it's that kind of surrender we're making to Krishna. People even surrender like that to a pet. You know, you buy a pet dog and you say, I'm going to take care of this dog for the rest of its life. One of my friends who got a pet said, yeah, at first they're cute and after a while it's just work. But the person who has love, they don't say, well, you know, you were a cute little puppy and now that you're just work, I'm going to, you know, have you put to sleep. Forget about this. I'm sure some people do. But that's surrender. It's that kind of surrender. And Krishna is very interesting. By the way, what is it that we're being asked to surrender? I know Krishna said, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, first do that as an offering to me. But all these things, the food we offer to Krishna, our time that we offer to Krishna, all of those, guess what? They all belong to him. So I was reading one purport of the 15th chapter, Prabhupada said, one should know what belongs to him and what belongs to Krishna. So I'm going to ask you, what belongs to us? There's something that belongs to us. Everything we have belongs to Krishna, but there's one thing that belongs to us. What belongs to us? Our free will. Our desires. Our free will. That's ours.
But it's only our free will not to acknowledge that everything.
Well, no, there's even variety in that. Just like if you choose to be a materialist, you can choose how you want to be a materialist. It's not that everyone who's a materialist is a murderer. There's billions of ways to be a materialist. You can be a great philanthropist. Right? You can go to war zones in Africa and go in front of enemy fire to rescue people. And there's so many ways to choose to be a devotee of Krishna also. There's the five main rasas and there's very individual. Surrender to Krishna means still I'm going to love Krishna in a particular individual way, and not surrender to Krishna means I'm going to rebel in a particular individual way. There's practically infinite variety. So I own my free will. I own it. It's mine. And that's what Krishna's asking us to surrender. I mean, yes, he's saying, offer me your food, from Utama. But that really, we can't really surrender that. That wasn't mine to begin with. That's just acknowledging that Krishna was always yours. And the biggest thing we don't want to surrender is our free will. We might offer Krishna our food. We don't want to give him our free will. Why? We're afraid. Now, what happens when you give Krishna your food?
You get it back.
You get it back. And when you get it back, what happens to that food? It tastes better. I mean, it really does taste better. Seriously. Once in Puerto Rico, I went to teach about Krishna consciousness at the university, and one of the other devotees was making cookies for the program. I was in the kitchen when she was making cookies, and I will promise you that those are the most ordinary cookies you could possibly have made. It was the simplest cookie recipe, just like sugar, butter, maybe a little bit of milk and some flour, maybe some vanilla, a pinch of salt. That was it. We took the cookies to the university, and every single person said, "What is the recipe for?" Because when Krishna eats the food, already food is the flavor of God. Already just an ordinary cookie, what you're really eating is God. You're eating the sunlight, the water, the earth minerals. That's all God. You're eating God. It's a taste of God. But when he personally eats it, you're tasting God. So you give him all your food, and you don't worry. Of course, sometimes Krishna does that. But you don't worry that your look in the plate will be empty. It comes back tasting better. So guess what happens when you give Krishna the only thing you can really give him, which is your free will? Guess what he does with it? He gives it back. He gives it back and he says, "Here you go, and you have full freedom now. You can do whatever you like." Therefore, the spiritual world, kalpavrikshalakshapratesu, is full of desire trees. The ground is chintamani. It will give you whatever you want. You can go wherever you want. This world, I can't go wherever I want. Even I come back to America, and I'm an American citizen, for goodness sakes, and they're asking me what I'm doing in my own country. Yeah? The security people, "What have you come to America for?" It's like, "I got an American passport, I'm an American citizen. Can I come to my own country? How long am I going to be here for?" "Where are you going?" Give them an address in Hilo. "Is that your permanent address?" Oh. You know, what to speak of if I want to go to other planets. I mean, I have a hard time just going from one country to another. But it's explained in the spiritual world, the residents can go wherever they like. They can go wherever they want in the spiritual world, anywhere they want in the material world. They can get all their desires fulfilled. They're completely free. So that's what happens when one surrenders one's free will to Krishna. And what happens when we try to hold on to it? Then we're imprisoned. Then we're locked in this body, which doesn't behave the way we like it to behave a lot of times. Or we're locked in this planet. We're imprisoned by our material desires and so many things. So if we meditate, if we think about a little bit how much love there is from an ordinary mother and multiply that billions and billions and billions and billions of times, that's how loving Krishna is. That's how kind Krishna is. That's how much of a shelter Krishna is. And he's infinitely powerful. So why not? He's making the invitation. He's holding out his hand. And he's offering his whole kingdom. "Come," he says, "you enjoy with me. Be my friend. Act as my parent," even, he'll say. "Act as my beloved. Any way you like. And you have all the resources," Prabhupada says, "the servant is enjoying practically on the equal level with the king. You have all the resources." He's so non-envious in the spiritual world. Often the residents look like him, even. Whatever you need. So as we hear about Krishna, we should gradually, usually it's a gradual process to get over this fear. "Oh, if I surrender to Krishna, what will he do to me? What will happen?" As if we're in control anyway. "If I surrender to Krishna, he might make me suffer." Are you never suffering now? So gradually, as we hear about Krishna, we will gain the confidence, we will gain the faith to to say, my dear Lord, I am yours. Whatever you want to do with me, you can do with me. And he'll say, fine, you're now a free soul. What would you like to do? How would you like to serve me? What kind of relationship would you like to have? Lord Kapiladeva says that the Lord takes whatever form the devotee wants to see him. So that much, he gives himself. Prabhupada says the devotee is holding Krishna in his hand. He gives himself. We were saying the mother gives her body to the child. Krishna completely gives himself to those who completely give themselves to him. So we have a few minutes if there's any questions or comments. Yes.
I don't know, like, just a comment. It's so clear from your talk tonight that how urgent Krishna consciousness is, because even those of us who say we know God in this world, we don't really know much about him. Like you said in the beginning, but the more we know about God as Krishna, the more we can actually grow up out of this delusion, this madness, this sectarianism, this fear, this all this stuff. So Krishna consciousness is so important. Where else could we find out about this wonderful person?
Very difficult. I mean, certainly other religious systems are teaching something about God.
Something.
Something. But many other religious systems, in fact, think it's a worthy goal to be afraid of God. I mean, okay, if you're a criminal, being afraid of the government makes some sense, but I don't think the government's aim is to have everybody be criminals that are afraid of them. I mean, a good mother and father doesn't want the children to be afraid of them. They want a loving relationship, not fear-based. So it's, I mean, being afraid of God is better than being an out-and-out criminal who's not afraid of God, which that's a kind of a step up. But that's not really the goal. That's not what Krishna's interested in. Thank you. Did you have something? Anybody else? Yes, sir.
Yes, I have a question. How we can truly love Krishna if we are always aware that he's God?
Ah. In the higher stages of realization, you forget that Krishna is God. In the beginning, you'll be aware, and after a while, you'll forget. Just exactly like our President Obama. So he's got his mother-in-law living in the White House, you know that, to help with the children. I'm sure she forgets that her son-in-law is the president. She knows. It's not that she doesn't know that he's the president. But I'm sure she forgets. I'm sure there's times that they're sitting and having dinner together, and it's completely out of her awareness. So when one gets on a very high level of love for Krishna, one does forget that he's God. One just thinks he's wonderful. And actually, Krishna wants that. Just like if any of us have a lot of money or fame or power or position, we don't want people liking us just for that. There's some exploitation involved with that. We want people to just love us for us. So if one loves God because he's powerful, that's okay. But that's not ultimately the kind of relationship that Krishna wants. He wants you to love him just because he's lovable, and just because he's wonderful, without consideration of his power and opulence. Yes?
At one lecture, a devotee asked the difference between heaven and a spiritual planet, and then he said, with the heavenly planet, you get everything you want, all enjoyment, happiness, the whole nine yards. And he said, so why would I want to go to the spiritual world? And the lecturer said, because there you get to serve Krishna. The reply was, that's it. And I could see that look of not real happy. And when he said, that's it, but the reply was, yes. Can you expound on that to make it sound a little more sweet?
Well, in heaven, it's not exactly that you get whatever you want, first of all. Mm-hmm. In heaven, you're still in prison. You're just in a higher level of prison. So sometimes there's a minimum security prison where people get to play tennis and have a television set. And maybe they even get to order, you know, cheese and mangoes, but they're still in prison. I mean, even the prisoner who's out on parole is still not a free person. So the higher planets, you're still not free. You're not in your original spiritual form. There's still anxiety.
We're all,
well, if we're on parole, that's pretty good, actually. Most of us are not even on parole. That's a good step up. But so, no, it's not that you get whatever you want. There's still anxiety. There's still competition. There's still envy. It's not what we want. You know, maybe you're on the lap of your auntie, but you're not on the lap of your mother. So relationship with Krishna means that the little baby's finally on the lap of their mother, getting their mother's milk. No matter how much you may love your big sister and your auntie and your uncle, you know, at a certain point you need your food and you have to go to mommy. So there's nothing in this world, not even the heavenly planets, that's going to really satisfy us. Is that all right?
Well, when the person said in the spiritual world you're allowed to serve Krishna, in the reply, and the devotee questioner said, that's it?
But that's the most.
The lecturer said yes.
Well, that's.
But they should have expounded a little bit more into why.
Well, you know, whenever people ask a question, you never have the time to give all the different points of view of the answers to that question. At that particular point in time, you can just give a particular facet of the answer. So, therefore, it's nice. That's one reason why it's nice to keep hearing and keep reading, because each time you're getting a different perspective and a different part of the answer. And as you study the philosophy more and more, you'll get a complete picture that will be fully satisfying. So thank you very much. Now we're going to have our RT ceremony. Hare Krishna.